Hello. In this audio snippet, we plan to talk about a combination or melange of several interrelated things, and a lot of it will seem to be a repeat of things we have said before, and for some reason, I personally feel like I wish I could just move on to other things, but it seems like these things keep coming up over and over and over again, as if there is this need to address these issues over and over again, to emphasize them for some reason. And again, it's all related in some way to Black America, and to the state of America in general. It's all related in a wider sense to how or why this country of America is about to die. We have less than 7 months or around that time left, and then this country will be dead. Its calling will be dead, and we will become a third world country with a little more money, but that's all we're going to be. And the decline of the country will not be immediate. It won't happen like at that very day that we die, that suddenly everything collapses and the world is over. But that will be the day that will signify the end of this country's run as a country of relevance. And we will decline into third world status, I would dare say, over a 30-year period. We'll just slide into oblivion and irrelevance. And we will become just like any Latin American country, with just a little bit more money, and even that will slowly be eroded as well. So we need to be talking about these things. I believe as a like an indictment, as if this country was on trial, and the prosecutor is pointing out the evidence of why this country is being sentenced to death. And so we're going to be talking about several things we have mentioned before, and the intention is to emphasize some things that just keep coming up that need to be repeated in some way. We'll go through some news stories that have appeared recently, either last week, either in this week or the week before. We'd like to start with a story, kind of a sad story, that says, I'm reading the headline here. It's from the Gateway Pundit, this website that I go to read what's going on every now and then. I sometimes don't agree with what the writers of the website say, but at least they give some information about stories and things that happen. So the headline says, 12-year-old football player dies suddenly after collapsing on the field during practice. This story came out yesterday, in other words, the day before the day that this is being recorded. And I'm going to read parts of the story because there are a lot of the points or things mentioned in the article are very relevant. It says at the beginning, Elijah Jordan Brown-Garcia, died after collapsing at football practice on Friday, February 10th. So he passed away a little over a week from the time of this recording. The thing is that it's interesting, just the very name of him, of the kid, is very interesting, Elijah. And then Jordan, we've been talking about not crossing the Jordan, America refusing to cross the Jordan. So this kid's name was Jordan, and Elijah. Elijah is famous, you know, if you read, you know, in the Bible, it talks about Elijah at the end, in his very last run, you could say, he's being harassed by this guy called Elisha, and Elisha just won't let him go. And according to the story in the Bible, that Elijah comes to the river Jordan, and he takes his cloak and strikes the river with his cloak, and the river kind of like opens up and kind of like the parting of the Red Sea when the Israelites came out of Egypt. So the thing is that the river kind of dries up and they can walk on dry ground. And apparently, from what I understand, or I semi-remember, I think they crossed the river, both of them walking. And when they got to the other side, then Elijah was taken up to heaven, and Elisha saw it, and he was left with the cloak that Elijah had used to strike the River Jordan, if I remember the story correctly. And then he struck the River Jordan himself, and the river opened up just as it had with Elijah. Now, the reason why I'm saying all of this is that Elijah is a name that's strongly related to the crossing of the River Jordan. And Elijah, if you look at his life, there are a lot of things that were wrong with that guy. Good things about him and bad things. But he represents, I guess in a sense, someone who crosses the Jordan just enough, you know, just enough to cross the Jordan, but doesn't go further than that. Then someone has to take his mantle, literally his cloak, and carry it on and complete the journey. The name Elijah is strongly related to the crossing of a Jordan, a kind of a reluctant crossing of the Jordan. That's how I would see it. Elijah is kind of that type of person, represents the people who don't want to make the full transition into something new, but they reluctantly do so, and they do just enough to get across, to break on through to the other side, as the song would say. But they don't go further than that. That's kind of where they stop. But at least they cross, and then they and someone else can take the mantle and keep going. But so this is the name of the kid, of the young kid who died, and it's interesting. Also, his name is kind of a combination of, I don't know, black and Hispanic, Brown - Garcia. So there's something Hispanic about the kid, but I see pictures of him, but he looks like, you know, a black kid. I don't see a Hispanic trait in him, but it might be maybe a Caribbean Hispanic, like black Hispanic, as happens sometimes. I don't know. The thing is that this kid died after collapsing at football practice, and he had just turned 12 2 months ago. This happened in Newark at a youth team's training, and it says here, while Elijah Jordan Brown Garcia was doing two of the things he loved most, spending time with his younger brother and getting ready for football practice. And it says, Elijah played for the Essex County Predators, a team owned by Bloomfield-based Big 21. I have no idea what that means, but it kind of drew my attention that the name of the team is the Essex County Predators. And that's a very creepy name for a kid's football team, and for any kid's sports team. I have no idea why anyone would want to call a kid's team the Predators. because as you know, that's kind of associated with people who try to go after little kids and abuse them. So it's kind of weird that that's the name of the team. And I think it's symbolic of many things. But the thing is, it says here, with the season still months away, Elijah was practicing football at Westside Park together with his 10-year-old brother, Mekhi, M-E-K-H-I. I had never seen a name like that. Not sure what it means or where it comes from, but that was the name of his younger brother. And it says, without warning, Elijah passed out. Mekhi immediately contacted his mom, and another parent dialed 911, but no one performed CPR. The coach was running errands when the incident happened. So the thing is, this 12-year-old kid was just running around, just like warming up, and he was with his 10-year-old brother. And the kid collapsed, and the 10-year-old brother sees that and goes and contacts his mom. And that's a figure. There's so many things there. It's like that kid. Remember that we have been talking so much about, am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper? And now there's this kid who is the younger of the two, and he sees his older brother collapse, and he is his brother's keeper in a sense, and he goes and tells his mom about it. Hey, my brother just collapsed. And the sad thing is the coach was running errands, and you might think, well, maybe he had a reason to be running errands. I don't know. Who knows what was going on? But to me, it's almost like a figure of how in America, in Black America, the Black man who is supposed to be there as a figure of responsibility, looking out for the kids in Black America, is not there. The Black father is not there. The Black father figure. And the coach was not there. And why were the kids practicing without the coach being there? What the hell is going on there? Usually, if you're in a, if kids gather to train, the coach is the first person there preparing the equipment, doing things. And he should be there, and he would be telling the kids how to warm up and all that. But the coach was just, not minding the store, as we've said before. The problem with Black America, the Black race has a calling to be watchmen on the watchtower. It's part of the DNA of being a Black person, and they have reneged on that duty of being on the watchtower because they're more interested in other things. So they are nowhere to be found, and just like that, this coach was not there. And then the mother says, this is the brother, they're quoting him saying, he didn't get hit, like no contact or anything. He ran about 20 yards, said he was going to take a little break. I don't think he took enough time, said brother Mackie Stratford, which is kind of a sad thing when he says, I don't think he took enough time. Like the little kid is like, he's a 10-year-old kid. He's just, he barely knows what's going on, and he doesn't understand. That maybe he thinks, oh, maybe he should have rested a little more, but I don't think any amount of rest would have been enough. I mean, he was gone. And it says here, Raven brother, Raven, like the bird, Brown, his mother, was shocked by the incident because her son had no history of health issues. Again, they're quoting here, no contact. It was just drills running back and forth. He didn't get hit, Brown says. He was a healthy kid. I don't know why Friday night was his day. And that's such a sad statement for a mom to say. I don't know why Friday night was the day that my son was going to die. Imagine being a mother and having to say those words. It says, Brown said that her 10-year-old son, Mekki, called to her that Elijah had suddenly collapsed and was no longer responsive. Brown claims she arrived at the location before the ambulance did. She claimed it took two calls from those on the field and a third from her before an ambulance arrived. So the mother was not there. She must have dropped off the kids and maybe gone to work. Who knows? And the kid called her. She rushed over to the place and she got there before the ambulance. And the ambulance took 30 to 40 minutes. And then he was taken to University Hospital where he died. And it says here, no details have been released on the cause of death. It's always like that. They die suddenly and no one knows why. No details are given. It's just complete silence. And his mom informed RLS Media that an autopsy will be performed by the state regional medical examiner's office. And a fundraising campaign was created to help with the funeral. But the thing is, I don't think we'll ever know what the results of the autopsy. And if we do, they're just going to be very ambiguous about it, but I think we all know why the kid died. We've been talking about Damar Hamlin, that young Black player who, so-called Christian guy who collapsed in the middle of a football game being watched by millions of people, and who almost died and kind of miraculously came back to life, and has refused to say anything. He does not want to admit that it was the injection, the mRNA gene therapy injection, the so-called vaccine that put him there to the brink of death. But he's so passionate, and that's his word, passionate about helping kids, that it's more important for him to talk about other things than about that. And he knows in the back of his mind, he knows it. He knows that that's what almost killed him. But he does not want to admit it, because the moment he admits it, he's going to lose his fan base. He's going to become the crazy guy who is not following the rest of the crowd. And that's more important to him than to truly to face the truth. And he would rather help kids in a way that keeps them popular than really helping them. Imagine this kid is dead. Does he care? This Damar Hamlin keeps saying, "I want to help kids. That's my passion." Well, if you're so passionate about it, son of a bitch, what about this kid? Do you care about this kid? You could have been the spokesperson, the person who would have sounded the alarm and gone up to the watchtower and told America and the world, "Watch out for this poison. Look at what it did to me." But no, he's too busy on his journey, as we said in the previous audio snippet. And those are his words. He wants to continue on his journey. So he's off on his journey somewhere. So he's lost there while the kids he claims to be helping are dying. And this is not only, and this was a 12-year-old black kid here in the New York area, in Newark, New Jersey. And the fact that, just as a side note, the fact that his team was called the Predators is symbolic, because the Democrats, the liberals, all these people are coming after the kids. And that's why they're trying to impose the injection on little kids, even though we all know the scientific data is very clear. Even the liberals would have to admit, in a moment of mental clarity, they know it, that the virus had practically no effect on kids. It was one of the amazing things about it. It seemed to not touch the kids at all. It was only targeting old people. We all knew that from the very beginning. It's not like a secret or a conspiracy theory thing. We all knew that. We all know that. Yet the obsession, we have to inject them because it's part of the ideology, because the injection is more than just protection against, or so-called protection against the virus. It is a sign of submission. It's a sign that you have submitted to the community calling to do this. The community, i.e. The elite, who speak on behalf of the community, have declared, the priests of the religion have declared from Mount Olympus, or Mount the high mount where the oracle resides, they have decreed that you must take the injection. And if you don't take the injection, then you're not submitting to the religion, to the ideology, to this cult of you sacrifice your life for the community and for the interests of the community. And by the way, we, the elite, are the ones who define what the interests of the community are. We don't let you decide for yourself what kind of sacrifice you want to make for the community. We will tell you. If you want to make a sacrifice, we will tell you the list of things you have to do to prove that you are indeed a good member of society, and that you are fulfilling your calling to serve the community. We will tell you what serving the community means. And one of the points is you take the injection, because that's how you protect others and from this. They kept saying that's how you prevent transmission and you help, you protect your, that's why we have to inject the kids, even though they won't get sick, but they will carry the virus home and infect their parents and grandparents, and then they will get sick. So they have to learn to serve the community. You're protecting the community by getting the injection, which was not true. And later on, it was proved and established clearly it does not prevent transmission. We all know. So now the claim is the injection just lowers the symptoms. But I'll tell you, in the company I work for, I've heard of people, yesterday or a few hours before this recording, that that just had the disease. I don't like to mention the name. I find it's the COVID disease. I don't like to say the word. It bothers me to no end. for reasons too long to explain. It just annoys me to say the word, so I avoid it at all costs. I rarely say the word. But I found out, that a certain person in the company had had the disease. And I know that person is injected to the hilt. And I know that for reasons, I can conclude that for a lot of reasons, I know for a fact the person is injected, like most of the people in the company that I unfortunately work in. And this person just mentioned that they had the disease. And I said in the back of my mind, it was a mixture of anger and sorrow. If this injection is so, and the person not only had the disease, but was incapacitated by it. What was the injection for? What was the point of the injection? If everybody's getting it, it's been 3 years and people are still getting it. And most of the time when I hear someone getting it, it's someone who's been fully injected. So what the hell? Pardon my French. But so the thing is that the predators have been coming and they want to indoctrinate the kids from the beginning. And they're also introducing all the gender transition nonsense. And they're predators coming after the kids because they want to control the kids' thinking. They want to submit them to the ideology from an early age. So it's fitting that this young kid died whilst practicing for a team called the Predators. So that seems fitting. But the thing is that this young kid died, and he was a black young American who's no longer with us. He's gone forever. And Damar Hamlin, he's on his journey. But the thing is, if he had been on the watchtower saying what he needed to say, then... not only would if he held, I mean, if he had been on the watchtower from the beginning, he would have never been injected to begin with. So he would have been speaking all these things out from the beginning. And I know he would have been given a platform to say, even if he had not, dropped on the field in front of millions of people on live television. I know he would have had a platform. This kid would have had a platform to speak. But he took the injection, he almost dropped dead, literally, and even then, he refused to get up on the platform of the watchtower to speak. But if he had spoken, he would have not only helped kids like this Elijah, this black American kid like Elijah Jordan Brown, who dropped dead on a football field, an American football field, just like he did, almost. He would have also helped this is another story, recent story from the Gateway Pundit again. And by the way, if anyone ever criticizes this website, if someone says, oh, that's all fake stories, well, what they criticize is the interpretation of the stories. But a lot of the stories, or most of the stories, are just news. I mean, it's not like they're making up these people. In fact, they usually provide a link to the original story, so it's not like this is, quote, what they say, fake news, which is this term that was invented by during the time of Barack Hussein Obastard, when he during that time they wanted to make Fox News look bad because Fox News was constantly attacking Obastard, so they tried to do a play on the word fox, and they changed it to fake. So instead of Fox News, they changed it to fake news, and that was the term they started using to smear, because that's their tactic. Anyone who disagrees with the ideology of the priesthood of the religion, the liberal religion, will get attacked and have their reputation destroyed. One of the five fundamental human rights, the right to a fair reputation. They attack that right. So they created this term fake news to try to smear anything that criticizes them. So that's what they do a lot with this website. And I found out because one day I did a search And then the search engine gave me a result. I don't use the traditional search engine, but even the engine I use gave me a search result from the Gateway Pundit, from Wikipedia, I think. And, and it said, the Gateway Pundit is a fake news website with far-right conspiracy theories, and blah, blah. And I went, my goodness, who wrote this? You know, some stupid religious fanatic from the liberal religion. But the thing is, sorry, I digress here. But the thing is, this story from the fake news Gateway Pundit, which in fact, which in reality is just a real story, it's as tragic. 17-year-old football player dies suddenly in his sleep following a cardiac arrest. And this kid is not black. He's white. He's not American. He's Canadian. It says here, last week in Laval, Quebec, Canada, a 17-year-old football player named William Karen Cabrera. It's interesting because the other kid who that we just mentioned, Elijah Brown Garcia, Brown-Garcia. So his surname was a combination of an English name, which I think is from a black family, Brown-Garcia. And Garcia is clearly a Spanish name. And this kid from Quebec, his surname is Karen-Cabrera. So it's interesting, Cabrera is a Spanish surname. So, coincidence? I don't think so. So, William Karen Cabrera died reportedly following a, quote, cardiac arrest. He was a student at Curé Antoine Labelle High School. The official cause of Caron Cabrera's cardiac arrest activity and subsequent death is unknown at this time. A full autopsy has yet to be performed. Oh, it's always like that. You know, never know what happened. No one says, oh, it was this, that, and the other. Nothing. They just don't say a thing. And so they they provided here a link to the original story from the Courrier Laval, which is in French, and they kind of provide a not a very good translation, I dare say, but I'm going to read one thing. So he was a football player, you know, because they also play American football in Canada. In fact, and many people don't know this, American football, as we know it now, started in Canada. It's a Canadian import. and I was reading, I found out about this kind of in an odd way, but it turns out that in America, there was a certain version of kind of like a mixture of rugby and soccer back in the 1860s, and it was always like 25 players against 25 players. It was like mayhem, and it was a very different style, and I think they even played with a round ball, like a soccer or, you know, regular football ball. And then they had a game, they invite the Harvard or some university invited, some university from, I think, Montreal or somewhere in Canada, to play. So they played one half with American rules and one half with Canadian rules. It's like the game of, football or, North American football had kind of evolved. And so Canada developed a certain version of it. They played with the, rugby style football that we have now, not the round football. And we were playing here with the round version. And so they played one half American style and the other half Canadian style. And it turns out that the Americans who watched, you know, how it was played Canadian style loved it. And America started absorbing that. So college, universities, you know, in America started playing with the Canadian style, and it just stuck. So Canadian. So I always thought my whole life that Canada copied America's football, but it turns out we copied Canada's football. So we took it and then kind of went with it. So the thing is that. He was a football player, and he didn't die on a field, but he died in his sleep. And it says here, Willem had just completed his fifth season with the Wolves. And interesting that the name of the team is the Wolves. Just like the other kid was playing for the Predators, this young kid was playing for the Wolves. And it says here, William was was a quality athlete, everyone's friend, always there to make us laugh, and his departure will leave a great void in our family of handball Laval. One can read on the Facebook page of this same organization of the Jesus Island. It says here, Will, take care of your gang of buddies and rest in peace. But the thing is that I didn't understand why it said Jesus Island. I went to the original French story trying to make out what it said, and I kind of got the same thing. It said l'île de Jésus or something like that, which is Jesus Island. And I don't know. I think it seems like this kid was playing for a Catholic school. That's kind of what I'm gauging. And there was some sort of organization called Jesus Island that he was affiliated with. That's kind of what I'm getting. And interesting that Jesus Island. So there's that biblical theme. This other kid, Elijah Jordan Brown Garcia. And this kid who was affiliated in some way or related to an organization called Jesus Island. And then it says here, William Caron Cabrera was a talented, passionate, playful, and smiling player who we were blessed to count among our big family, unquote, adds the flag football Terrebonne club. And Terrebonne literally means good earth. It's with heavy hearts that we learn of his passing today. He was able to make a positive impression on people throughout his too short life. But interesting to me, it just caught my attention when they said William Caron Cabrera was a talented, passionate, playful, and smiling player. So again, that thing about passion, you know, being passionate about something, that matriarchal concept that distorts people with a visionary calling. That's how he died. I think we will never know exactly what he died of, but he just died no one knows. It's never said whether they took the injection or not, but all these young athletes passing away, and it seems to hit athletes more. And I believe it's because when you're athletic and you're playing around and it's like as if you force your circulation to run faster, and then the spike proteins or whatever the hell is in that concoction just flows through the body more powerfully, shall we say. And that's why they get killed more quickly. It's as if the more active you are, the faster you get killed. Because the whole move in these times has been towards passivity. If you're a sheep, you're a passive. You know, you just follow instructions. You just, you know, they tell you what to do, and you go ahead and do it. If they say, you know, raise your leg, you raise your leg. If they say raise your hand, you raise your hand. If they say turn to the left, you turn to the left. If they say turn to the right, you turn to the right. If they say bend over, you bend over. And you know what happens after that. So you just do whatever you're told, and that's okay. And I would dare say that people who don't have much of a lifestyle, who are passive, and even physically passive, are less prone to be killed off by this injection than people who are active. So it's a punishment. Like if you dare to have initiative, to have a drive of your own, you're going to get killed. And that's kind of where this whole thing is aiming. It's always trying to prevent you having a thought of your own or an action of your own. DeMar Hamlin could have helped this kid too. This young 17-year-old kid who died for no reason at all. No, he died. There's a reason why he died. What I mean is that there was no, there's a certain futility to his death. It's like a pointless death. And the fact that he was 17 years old, 17, as we share on the website where this is these audio clips are posted, 17 is a very significant number. It represents a lot of things. It represents like a coming out, a manifestation of something great. And he just died. And I'm looking at his picture right now. He's smiling. And he has he's wearing the number 18. And 18 is a number of carnage, a number of a lot of bad things. It's the carnage of the manifestation of greatness. That's what's going on right now. And the kid who's supposedly connected to something religious or something related to Christianity or somehow, he just didn't get the memo that he was not supposed to do what he did, you know, to take the injection. And we can more or less assume that he took the injection, because I know. I know because I am in constant connection with things related to Canada for reasons that are too long to explain. And I know that over there, there were even more fascistic about the injection. Like, you couldn't enter Canada without the injection, just like you can't enter the U.S. If you're a foreigner without the injection. And even if you are a Canadian, I don't think you could even re-enter Canada if we didn't have the injection. I might be wrong on that, but I know for sure that foreigners were required to take the injection. I don't know if that requirement has gone away. I think the U.S. is one of the only countries left in the world that still demands that foreigners take the injection, which is so stupid. But illegals can come in without the injection, no problemo. You know, come on in, come on over. We don't mind you not having the injection, but if you're a legal migrant or visitor, you have to take the injection or you can't come in. Well, Canada was very strict about it, very strict, because they have a little girly boy, a little whore. Her name is Justine Trudeau. And yes, and that bastard's pronoun is a she. So that's her preferred pronoun, Justine Trudeau. And that's the correct pronunciation, Trudeau. Turd, and O means water. So water, water turd is the correct translation of that bastard's name. And this fascist has been imposing this nonsense, his evil, the son of Fidel Castro. And that's not a conspiracy theory. That's a long story, but that is a reality, that he is the son of Castro, because his father and his mother were very, they had kind of like an open marriage, and it is known that they were traveling through the Caribbean, and at the time when this son of a bitch was conceived, and they visited, they had an unscheduled visit in Cuba. They had a period in their kind of a travel itinerary that is not accounted for. And it's believed that that was the time when they visited Cuba, because his father, Pierre, I think his name was a commie, very, you know, socialist. He loved Castro. And apparently his wife loved him too. And if you look at pictures of Justine, and of Justine Trudeau and Fidel, it's like a spitting image. So this guy has been imposing all this nonsense, and they've been very strict about it. So I know this kid is injected, and I'm sure he must have been required to be injected to be able to play and participate. And this kid, you know, the way they describe him, you know, very outgoing, you know, very social. You know, that means that. That's the problem when you're too social, when it's so important for you to be in a social group and to be part of something, that you're willing to sacrifice and compromise your principles to be part of a group or a part of the crowd. you know, that's when the truth becomes irrelevant. You know, you can be singing to Jesus and doing all this stuff and going to church, but you're not going to listen to the truth if your concern is to be in the in crowd, to be connected socially. And I think that was the downfall of this kid, the Achilles heel, that killed him at the end of the day. And that's why he took the injection. He could have been helped by the message of someone like Damar Hamlin, but Damar Hamlin was too busy on his journey. Then there was another story that came out recently. A 25-year-old goalkeeper died suddenly right after stopping a penalty kick. Now, this guy was not black, he was white, and he was not American. This kid was not even North American. This young man was European. He was Belgian. And it says here in this Gateway Pundit story again, his name was Arne Spiel. So this is the first one without a Hispanic surname attached to him. It says, a 25-year-old goalkeeper died suddenly during a football match in West Flanders, Belgium, on Saturday evening. Arne Spiel, a goalkeeper of the Winkelsport B, has died on the spot after stopping a penalty kick in the second half of the match. It says that you know, he stopped the penalty kick, but then he collapsed. And the ball was still in play. Assistant coach Stefan DeWertchen of Winkelsport B said, our goalkeeper got up as quickly as possible to get the ball, but he fell down afterwards. It was really terrible to see. And then the game was immediately stopped. You know, does that sound familiar, Damar? You know, someone collapsing in the middle of a live action and the game suddenly stopping. It says the emergency services quickly arrived on site and tried to revive the 25-year-old goalkeeper for half an hour. Does that sound familiar, Damar? Espiel was then rushed to the hospital, but he was later declared dead on arrival. The players all showered together after the incident, and then we sat down in the canteen, says DeWertchen, the coach. When the message came that our goalkeeper had died, what an unusually hard blow. I think some players did not realize what exactly happened. Yeah, I know they don't know what happened. They still don't get it. But the thing is that, you know, he passed away. And his younger brother, Aaron, sat back on the bench for the first time in weeks after an injury and saw everything happen before his eyes. Again, there's a brother watching this thing happen. I don't know if you see the coincidence there, like just like with the other kid, Elijah Brown, who his younger brother saw, and this again, a younger brother too, saw him die in front of him. And it says, this is a disaster and a shock to everyone, said Patrick Rotsaert, sports manager of Winkel. Arne had been with the club all his life and was very loved. He was a wonderfully sympathetic boy, always in a good mood and willing to help. This is really a heavy blow, first of all, for his family and also our entire club. So again, a kid, a young man who was very sympathetic, good mood, willing to help. You know, that's sort of the spirit of service, that server personality that we've mentioned before. And just like the 17-year-old kid in Canada, a server personality, that the thing of server people are very social. You need to be social to be a good server. A waiter who is antisocial is not going to last very long. A person who serves has to have that kind of social attitude about him, and who has to love engaging other people in communion. And this kid had that personality, and just like Damar Hamlin. So we see this pattern of these people who are, they're the ones who are most willing to take the injection because they don't want to lose that communion, that connection that gives them a sense of life. And it's understandable. We all need that contact. There's a need for it. But people who have the server personality seem to have a bigger need for it. And sometimes that drives them to do things they're not supposed to do. That's why people with a server personality get into addictions. because they want to follow the crowd. They want to be with the in crowd. So if the crowd says to take drugs or do this or drink, they do it because they want to be part of the crowd, and they get driven into these low passions. So they get passionate about things, and that passion drives them to low places. But the thing is that he died. And in this case, the ambulance or the emergency services arrived very quickly. With a kid in New York, they didn't. And I was reading the comments, and you know, because the mother was complaining. I got there before the ambulance. The ambulance took 30 minutes to get there, which is ridiculous. We're not living in a third world country. Well, we're about to live in a third world country in 7 months. But the thing is that we're still not there. It's just unjustifiable. But the reason why it happens a lot in certain parts of the country, that the, you know, the medical emergency services are so slow, is because they are overwhelmed by unnecessary emergencies, especially by illegals. Illegals in America, Hispanics have this habit. They have the culture is a culture of opportunism. The Hispanic culture is one that if they can take advantage of you, they will. That it's taught in the culture. That's a sign of you being brighter than other people. It's like there's a certain kind of praise that goes along with you being able to take advantage of someone else. It shows that you're clever in their culture, in their mindset. That's why they keep destroying each other. That's why their countries are in such disarray. And when they take advantage of you, they don't see themselves as committing a wrong. They see, in fact, in their thinking, in the Hispanic culture thinking, if you are taken advantage of, it's your fault. In other words, if you leave the car door unlocked and they can get in and rob you, your car, it's not their fault. It's your fault for leaving the car unlocked. It's your fault for not being more careful and leaving a door of opportunity for them to go in through. That's why when they get into the country illegally, it's not their fault of them breaking the law or violating principles and coming in. It's the Americans' fault for leaving the door open, the border open for them to come in. It's your fault. If we can get break into your house, it's your fault for leaving the window open. That's the attitude that the Hispanic culture embraces. Not everyone is like that, but that's the general attitude. It is embraced. And you see the pattern of behavior all over the place. I see it. I've seen it my whole life. This is not me just repeating some nonsense. I've lived it. I know. I have experienced it firsthand. I've seen it over and over again throughout my life. So I'm speaking out of experience, and I'm speaking out of deep observation. And these people take advantage of the Good Samaritan laws in America that say that, if someone goes to the emergency room, they must be treated. The emergency rooms in America cannot turn someone away. It's against the law. And Hispanics know that. So that the door of opportunity. So they start using the emergency room as their GP. You know, it's like it's their doctor for consultations. Whenever they have a cold, whenever they have anything, and they want some medicine, some free medicine, or some free medical attention, they just go to the emergency room. Or they just call the ambulance, or do this, or do that, do the other. And because they know they will not be turned away. They don't have insurance and all that. So, but because of the law, they will be taken care of. And they know it, and they take advantage of it. And in California, for example, that's a big drain on the California budget year after year. Illegals using the emergency rooms, and then the emergency rooms charge the government, for the medical care. And that leads to bottlenecks, especially in highly populated areas with a lot of Hispanics. Then it becomes difficult. So this kid, maybe he could have been saved, this Elijah Brown, Jordan Brown Garcia. But, the Hispanics were too busy consuming the emergency services that this kid needed, and that's why he died. I just wanted to mention that. So we mentioned three people: the 12-year-old young black kid who died playing, practicing football, American football. The 17-year-old Canadian kid from Quebec, Laval, Quebec, who died in his sleep, and he was a football American football player. And then the 25-year-old goalkeeper who died stopping the penalty. See, the thing is, it's that he stopped the penalty, and he got up because the ball was still in play. He was trying to, you know, get up to be able to block a shot from the other team because the ball was still in play. He blocked the ball, but the ball, you know, bounced off, and he was concerned about it, about the other team shooting again. So he was trying to get up to be ready. It's someone who wants to spring up and act, and the shot, the injection killed him. You see what I'm saying? It's like people who want to rise up and do something, those are the people who get immediately killed by the injection. The injection is intended to kill people who are not passive. And so now we've set three people. And now another story. It says it. This is stories from another website called NOQ Report. That's NOQReport.com. NOQ. I think it's news, opinions, and quotes. That's what NOQ stands for. So NOQ Report.com had this article. A recent story says it begins. Brazilian socialist President Lula da Silva forces poor families to vaccinate their children so they can receive financial aid from his regime or risk receiving nothing. So the son of a bitch who's now in power, who stole the election, and Bolsonaro is now in Orlando. We don't know what's, you know, yellow belly Jair Bolsonaro is somewhere in Orlando. He's gone. He's on his other journey too, and unfortunately, and now. Despite the millions protesting in Brazil, now this guy has already kind of entrenched himself in power, and he said that now he has established a condition that there's a certain kind of program to help the poor people in Brazil. It's been in effect since 2003, 2004, apparently. And obviously poor people become dependent on that type of provision. And now he has said, you don't inject your kids, we're not going to give you the money. And he said it to the poor. And that's kind of the irony, because communists, because this son of a bitch is a communist, he's going to burn in hell, the little bastard boy. He's going to burn in hell and for all of eternity. He's going to suffer and be tormented. So all this happiness he has right now for being in control and powers, he's going to find it so unsatisfying when he's burning in hell. But this little bastard boy, this little bitch, he's a communist, and communists are always, they always do the opposite of what they say. They always say they care about the poor people, but they really don't. So it's ironic because now who is affected by this? You know, a rich guy, a wealthy person in Brazil is not going to be, you know, if the injection imposes restrictions on people, the people who are affected the most are the people who have fewer resources, who have fewer opportunities. If you can't get a job because you're not injected, you know, the poor are affected. A wealthy person doesn't have to work. They own a company. They don't need to get the injection if they don't want to. So he is imposing. So if you're a poor person, you're living day to day, you barely have enough for your kid. Now this son of a bitch is telling you that if you don't take the injection, your kids are not going to have food on the table. Imagine the evil of this. So Damar Hamlin could have become this big spokesperson, not only for America, for Canada, for Europe, and the whole world. To speak out against this kind of imbecility, but he's on his journey. In the meantime, this is happening, and sadly, you know, Brazil is just gone or going into decay. while Jair Bolsonaro is somewhere else. And speaking of people who are somewhere else, there was another story on the Gateway Pundit, and I'm going to read the headline. It says, Damar Hamlin refuses to disclose the official reason doctors gave him for his heart stopping. Quote, "That's something I want to stay away from." So he was being interviewed by another football player, Michael Strahan, that I used to like. Now kind of am ambivalent about him. He used to play for the New York Giants. And he was a very relevant football player for many reasons that they are too long to explain. And he's now a big person in the entertainment media and so forth. And he's a commentator, football commentator and all that. He's developed a big career after football. And he was interviewing this, Damar Hamlin. And let me look here in the story. It says, Strahan asked Hamlin about the doctor's explanation of what caused his heart to stop beating. Quote, "You're 24, peak physical condition that could run circles around you right now. How did the doctors describe what happened to you?" Unquote, Strahan asked. Hamlin said that he would not comment on what may have caused his heart to stop. And then, quote, "That's something I want to stay away from," unquote, Hamlin said. But he added that the doctors never told him if he had had any heart issues or anything that was not normal. Strahan said, quote, "I know from my experience at the NFL, they do more tests than anything. And in the course of you having your physical, did anybody ever come back with any, say, you had a heart issue or anything that was abnormal?" And then he answered, "Honestly, no. I've always been a healthy, young, fit, energetic human being, let alone an athlete. So it was something that we still process, and I'm still talking through my doctors to see what everything was," Hamlin said. Whatever, you know. And it says Hamlin said he's still trying to recover from the trauma he experienced as a result of the tragic incident. And then he said something so stupid. "I'm still working through things. I'm still trying to process all the emotions and the trauma that comes from dealing with a situation like that and not really having people around or like no one in my immediate circle who's dealt with something like that." In other words, he needs someone who went through a heart attack like him and almost died, and someone who can empathize with him. That's another thing. People who have the server personality deal in the world of empathy. And that's another big word with them. And empathy, unfortunately, they don't understand empathy at the deeper level. Empathy is a very powerful thing, but at a deeper level. When you are your brother's keeper, you have one of the deepest forms of empathy. When you're willing to pay a price to restore someone else, that's the deepest form of empathy. But that's the empathy that you will see in people who are operating the visionary personality in a good way. Empathy at the server levels, at the server personality level, when it gets corrupted, it just becomes just this constant desire to feel, to share emotions, and to exercise this sort of useless and futile mercy, because this is all an exercise in futility. It's oh yeah, I'm caring about people, but it's caring in a way that doesn't really change anything. It's caring in a way that doesn't produce any long-term results, that doesn't deal with the heart of the matter, doesn't deal with the issues at hand. They just sidetrack the issues, and they just keep kind of like just chipping at the edges or chipping on the surface, but never dealing with the actual issues. It's just a whole exercise in futility. Just like this kid, this stupid son of a bitch, quote, Christian boy, who went through this whole thing, and he would be the first one to have to admit that according to his own faith, his God supernaturally healed him, yet he's still not literally getting to the heart of the matter. He had a heart attack caused by the injections. He does not want to go there. He refuses to go there. And I haven't wanted to hear the video of the interview because I just can't stomach him. But I've heard, I could be wrong on this, but I have gotten the impression that when he was asked the question, "What did the doctors tell you?" that his response, he like waited like 10 seconds. It was like a long, awkward silence. I don't know how long the silence was. I don't want to count the seconds. I couldn't care less at this point. But whether it was literally long or not, I know that in his mind there was a long pause. And that's why he went, I just don't, there's something I want to stay away from. And you know why he wants to stay away from it? Because he knows what is there. And he knows that if he goes there, he's going to lose friends. He's going to lose everything that he's so, quote, passionate about. So he wants to continue with this futile work of helping kids while the kids are dying from this injection. So what kind of empathy is there if it's just a superficial empathy that doesn't produce any change? That's why he wants to avoid the issue. They just keep avoiding the heart of the matter constantly over and over again. And just as a side note, and someone kindly shared this with me by email, and then I also saw it later in a story. I'm reading a headline from the New York Post. It says, "Adrian Peterson rips Damar Hamlin's Super Bowl 2023 jacket. Blasphemy." And I find this interesting for on many levels. You may want to read the story. He was wearing a jacket during the Super Bowl 57 that was played recently. He was there at the game, and he was wearing this stupid jacket with a disgusting-looking Jesus, supposedly on a cross. It's creepy, and it looks like something someone who hates Christianity would draw. And whether you like Christianity or not, whether you agree with it or not, just at least you have to kind of look at the stupidity of the inconsistency. I mean, if you really, it's like, imagine a Muslim wearing something that made Meshuggah look, you know, their favorite prophet look like a monkey or some sort of monster. They would, I mean, they don't even allow people to draw cartoons of Meshuggah. They kill people for doing that. That's not right. But at least you could say they're consistent. At least they have that. And this son of a bitch is not consistent. And so Adrian Peterson, who is a former running back for the Minnesota Vikings, I used to watch him play, pretty good player. He's a Christian, or I think he kind of believes in God in some way, and he criticized the thing. He called it blasphemous. The thing is that was a jacket from an artist called Takashi Murakami. Some sort of Japanese bastard who is apparently a very famous artist. So he does lots of things, drawings and sculptures and things. And I read about him a little bit, and it turns out that his most there was one sculpture, a tall 9-foot, I think, sculpture that he did that sold for like $15 million at some auction or something. And that's his most expensive work of art that, you know, that he's ever done. And he's done other kind of well-known or very expensive artworks, if you can call that art. And I wish I could explain to you what the statue is about, but I can't, because that would be so vulgar and so disgusting. I don't want this to get recorded in an audio clip. You'll have to look it up yourself. I can't tell you what the statue was about, but if you found out about it, you would understand why I can't say it. It's so revolting, disgusting. And this idiot Hamlin was wearing one of this guy's jackets. the so and he talks about God and this and that and my passion and blah blah blah, but you know, what the hell. Now the thing is, I'm gonna read here what Adrian Peterson said. He said, "You should be thanking God, son." Peterson wrote a caption on Instagram. "This is blasphemy. We all fall short, but come on, man. I find this disrespectful." And this is the thing that, you know, we've been saying over and over again. You should be thanking God, son. Like, if you really believe in God, then you should be speaking out, like, emphasizing how your God rescued you. And we talked about how he was standing with a lot of people behind him, the people who helped him, the medical staff who helped him. He was giving a speech, and he just gave a little shout out to his God. And then he gave a lot of thank yous to the medical staff, and he could have taken that opportunity and said, "Thank you all for what you did for me. I really appreciate you guys. You're doing your job." Because, you know, at the end of the day, that's what they were doing. They were doing their job. It's not like they volunteered and came out of, you know, all over the country to the Cincinnati hospital to rescue this guy. Like, I heard about him. Let me fly to Cincinnati and see how I can help. They were working at the hospital. You know, if someone comes in who has a cardiac situation, they're there. That's what they get paid for. Yes, it's a wonderful thing that they did, obviously, but it was their job. You know, that's what they get paid to do. So he could have turned around and said, "Thank you very much for doing what you did for me, you know, which is part of your job. But all of your efforts would have been futile if my God had not intervened and saved my life." You see what I'm trying to say? I think this is what is being said throughout all these stories. The futility of what's being done. It's like a claim that we're doing something, but we really didn't do diddly squat. You see what I'm saying? And we dance around the thing that needs to get done, and we do everything but the thing that needs to get done. And that's what we're doing over and over and over again. So the thing is that he could have, you know, said, "My God, he's the one who saved me. You were the instrument, and you would have been useless without him." He could have said that in a more diplomatic way, not that bluntly, you know, because obviously he wouldn't want to humiliate the people behind him from the Cincinnati hospital. I would not have done that myself. I would have kind of in a subtle way pointed out, "You guys would have done nothing without my God. And if I am a Christian, that's what I would do. If I'm a Christian and I believe in my God, then I will say it like that." Because you got to be consistent, boy. You got to be consistent. I mean, either you believe or you don't believe. You don't believe, don't believe. You know, do whatever you want. Don't believe. You will face your consequences for not believing. And if you believe, then you will have consequences for believing too. But wherever you are, be consistent. Because the moment you start living in a consistent life, you're going to see, if you're consistent about doing something stupid, you will find out as you live consistently in that stupidity, that is stupid. See what I'm saying? If you're consistent, you will find, if you're seeking the truth and are consistent about it, you will eventually find the truth, because when you're consistent about something that is false, you will realize the stupidity of the falsehood. When you follow the falsehood to its natural conclusion, you realize, oh, this is stupid. So then you turn away from that and seek something that is true. So consistency is important. And these people don't have it because the server is always thinking, how do I please people? How do I please people? So pleasing people is more important than the truth. And Peterson was not a perfect person. And that's one thing that people started criticizing him about. He had issues too, but he's trying. That's why he said, "We all fall short, but come on, man." That's what he said to Hamlet. But at least he's trying, and he was not an irrelevant player. If you don't know about much about American football, he's the league's fifth all-time leading Russia, which is a big thing, because the only people who could be ahead of him would be Jim Brown, Walter Payton, Eric Dickerson, and what's his name? The guy who played, Emmett Smith, who played for the Cowboys. And by the way, all the names I just mentioned are all black. And this Adrian Peterson is black too. So we are talking about black America, even though it doesn't look like it sometimes. But the thing is, at least this guy was on the watchtower. He saw from the watchtower that this idiot was wearing a jacket, and he spoke out about it. He got criticized for it, but he spoke out. And I find it interesting that this guy played for the Minnesota Vikings for so many years, because as you may recall in the previous audio clip, we talked about a guy called Kendrick, I think, Hamlin. Person was apparently mentally unstable or something. That's what they said. A black guy, he attacked a representative from Minnesota. I think a state representative or someone from Minnesota or related to Minnesota in government, in an elevator. The woman got into the elevator and he hit her on the chin or something, and she threw hot coffee at him or something. But so she was able to survive the attack without too much damage. But his name was Kendrick Hamlin. And I still don't quite understand the meaning of that whole incident, but it's interesting. His surname is also Hamlin, and I kept saying, why did he? What? Where's Minnesota in all of this? And it's interesting that Minnesota is where this Adrian Peterson played for so many years. I don't know if he finished his career at Minnesota, but he was for a long time a Minnesota Vikings player. Now that we've said all that, let me start moving towards something else, and it speaks to the futility of things. So Damar Hamlin is on his journey, and even when he's being criticized by someone like Adrian Peterson, he's going to be continuing on his journey. And in the meantime, while that guy's on his journey, there was this other player we mentioned in the other audio clip called Patrick Mahomes. He is a black, half, I think he's half black. He doesn't look like all black. I think he must be half black, half white. I don't know. I could be wrong. But the thing is that, but he is considered a black player, and he looks black enough. So Patrick Mahomes, he's the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, and they played against the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl last week, and the Eagles were quarterbacked by another black player, Jalen Hurts, I think his name was. And this was the first time ever in an American Super Bowl or any football championship game in America that the championship game involved two black quarterbacks, two starting black quarterbacks. And I found that so interesting that it took until Super Bowl 57, after, I don't know how old the NFL is, but I don't know if it's 100 years old, but it's getting to 100 years old. It's almost taken 100 years or close to that for two black players to face each other, black quarterbacks, to face each other in a championship game, in a Super Bowl or a Super Bowl. I find it interesting this happened as we've been doing these audio snippets about black America. Coincidence? Well, you may want to call it that. I wouldn't think so. But I know it's that talking about black America and the final days of America as a nation with a purpose, it's like that was like the final. This is the final Super Bowl of America as a nation with a purpose. This is the last one, the Super Bowl that was just played, and it was like on this last opportunity, these two black players who represent, you know, black America, the group that should have been on the watchtower as America died, they were playing against each other in that final game. And I know that it's all very significant. And it was a very tight game. I didn't watch it at all. I didn't even watch the interviews at the end. Well, I did watch a portion of one interview just out of curiosity and then switched the channel. But the thing is that it was a tight game. It was 35-35 from what I've read. And Kansas City was able to score a field goal at the end. But it's interesting. They could have scored a touchdown to go ahead 42-35. But they chose a field goal because that way they were able to run out the clock more, and they left only a few seconds for Philadelphia to try to tie the game, and I found that very sad, because if I had been the coach, I'd said, you know, let's go for it, touchdown, 42-35. I'm going to trust my team, my defense, to hold the Eagles from scoring a touchdown in less than a minute. But they played it safe and they ran out the clock and kicked the field goal. So the final score was 38-35, and the Eagles were unable to do anything with the few seconds they had left, and the game was over. And the Chiefs came from behind. They were down by 14 points or something, at one point, and they were able to come all the way back and beat the Eagles. And the fact that it ended at 38-35 is very significant, because 38 is a number of stagnation. It's a number of people who want, if you read in the Bible, it talks about the Israelites wandering in the desert for 38 years. The people who never crossed the Jordan. So that's always that theme. We never crossed the Jordan. And instead of going 42-35, it's like going over 38, crossing 38 and entering into 40, if it was after 40 years that the Israelites crossed the River Jordan, according to the Bible. So instead of going over 40 and scoring 42 points, they decided to get stuck at 38. 38 is a number of stagnation, like being stuck in something old that never changed. And that's how the game ended, and I think it was a fitting end. And the sad thing is, when I did switch to see if there was any interview or anything, I saw Patrick Mahomes being interviewed, and I heard him rambling about him getting hurt, and then he got better and blah blah blah. Apparently, he got hurt during a play in the game, and I said, okay, is he going to say something about his God, or is he just going to keep talking? And I heard him rambling, and I realized, oh, he's off the God mode. Before, he was, you know, like thanking God and all that, but now it's like, oh, he got caught up in the moment. It's like, no, I got better and I came back. It's like, I did it. And I said, oh, you know, he's in a different mode. And that's why I flipped to another channel and didn't watch him. So I found out, interestingly, that in this story on the Daily Mail, it says, Patrick Mahomes reveals all the details of Chiefs' wild post-Super Bowl party in appearance on Jimmy Kimmel, as MVP admits he is yet to go to bed after heading straight to Disneyland with his wife and two children. And then the only reason why I'm sharing this story is that and I see a picture of him sitting there smiling with Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel is a stupid son of a bitch, an idiot, a retard, a person who thinks he's smart, but is actually an idiot. You listen to him talk, and he speaks with such self-righteousness. He's a comic, and like a show host, and he thinks he's clever, but he just says stupidity. But he's this type of person who likes to be part of the in crowd. He is in that mode. And if you had an argument with a logical argument with him, you could beat him up and destroy him. And I say beat him up in a figurative sense. I guess you could also beat him up physically, because he doesn't look that manly or strong enough to engage in a real fight, a physical fight. But that's not the point. The thing is that you could destroy any of his arguments in 5-10 seconds. He's that stupid. But the thing is, he's so self-righteous about it. And he has this kind of sarcastic. He feels in control by mocking people. So he mocks people in a stupid way and thinks he's so clever about it that, that gives him a sense of power over people. He thinks that he can do this clever little mocking thing, and that's how he destroys everybody. But he does not have a mental capacity. I mean, you could, if you try to talk metaphysics with him, it would be like talking to a monkey. He's that stupid. And he's evil and sarcastic and is he's like a little demon. So the question that begs the question, what is this so-called Christian doing sitting there smiling and chatting it up with a demon? What the hell is he doing there? And that tells you, you know, the guy who was acting so well before, who was saying, oh, I thank God, and, you know, things that we were saying before, now it's all for naught, because they do something good and then they destroy it because he realizes he wants to be in the in crowd. He wants to be part of you know, being part on the Jimmy Kimmel show is like a way of guaranteeing that you're in the in crowd, that you are with the cool idiot liberals, and that's where he wants to be, and he didn't have to be there, and but he chose to be there. So that tells you that even the people who seem to be showing a sign of hope, hopeless, as we were saying in the previous audio clip, all these false balloons, these heroes that rise up and seem like they are the ones who are going to bring the change, and it's no, they always come falling flat like a burst balloon. And so he's not going to take up what Damar Hamlin failed to take up on. He's not going to go there because he's obviously more concerned about being on the Jimmy Kimmel show than about really affecting any fundamental change. And speaking of change, and time has gone so quickly, but we'll start talking about this in the few minutes we have left here. The theme, the underlying theme of everything we're saying is the futility of all these superficial things that have no consequence. Damar Hamlin helping kids as the kids are dying in real life, that he could be helping. And people who could be helping are too busy trying to be popular to do anything about what's going on. But what is really going on, aside from people, young kids dying from the injection? Well, we have a story, and this is very relevant. And I think we did talk about this a little bit previously. The headline on the Daily Mail, recent headline, it said, "Where are things going wrong? Damning report finds there are 23 public schools in Baltimore where none of the children understand basic math, as parents blame Democratic-led cities' fraud and corruption." So there was this thing called Project Baltimore that analyzed school test results and published their conclusions, and they found this, that that at 23 schools, there were 10 high schools, 8 elementary schools, 3 middle high or middle slash high schools, and 2 elementary middle schools. And this, in these 23 schools, not one student passed their grade level math. Not one student. And this is, you know, Damar Hamlin cares about the kids. Well, does he care about these kids? This is very sad for me to hear. Baltimore is where I grew up. That's where I went to high school and college. That's where I graduated high school and college, in Baltimore. I didn't go to public school in Baltimore. But, you know, I was very, very blessed to have a scholarship to one of the best private schools in Baltimore through no working of my own. That was a blessing that was given graciously by my provider. But the thing is that, it's sad to me to hear this. Baltimore's now, you know, it's a mostly black city. So this is all related to black America again. And this is what's going on with the public school system. And it says here, Davida Allen, not sure how to pronounce her name, said she was angry. The CEO of Baltimore Public Schools, Sonia Centelisis, whatever, was earning a base salary of $333,125, which rose to $444,875 with allowances, yet students were still failing. The CEO of Baltimore Public Schools, you know, $400,000 a year. It's almost half a million. I mean, in 5 years, this person, you know, with that salary makes $2 million. Imagine that. And there's no accountability. And that this goes to what we've said before. In the new American Constitution, there would have been 10 pillars. And the fourth pillar that we talked about in one audio clip many months ago, it feels like years, but in this fourth pillar we talked about, it's the pillar of taking time to reflect, like stepping away. Authority needs to step away from what it's doing and reflect on what's being done and try to improve or go to a new dimension. In other words, not get into a rut, not get into a pattern of doing the same thing over and over again and never progressing to a new dimension. But to do that, to progress to a new dimension, you're required to almost, like, in a sense, like take a Sabbath, like take a sabbatical, in a sense, in a figurative sense, and step back from your regular activities and analyze what you've done, and evaluate it and see, okay, am I stuck in a lower dimension? Do we need to do something to go to a higher dimension, or are we doing something wrong in the current dimension that we need to fix? So you have to be constantly evaluating yourself. And this is what this Project Baltimore people did. They evaluated, you know, okay, we're supposedly improving public schools, we're paying this bitch, Sonia, whatever, $444,000 a year. How is our money, producing results? You know, what are the results from all this money? And the answer is, you know, disaster. And this is the thing that, and conservatives criticize Democrats. See, this is, Baltimore is a Democrat-run city. I live there. You know, everyone is a Democrat, and everyone votes Democrat, except for 1984, when everyone, even Maryland, voted for Ronald Reagan. But that was a long time ago. The thing is that Baltimore is a Democrat city. No one can blame the white supremacists for what's going on to these black kids in the public schools. They're being destroyed. They have no future. How can they have a good life if they have a terrible education? How can they have a good career, a good profession, and make money and have good paying jobs, well-paying jobs, if they are receiving such a crummy education? But no one cares. The conservatives just mentioned this as a way to criticize the Democrats. See, when Democrats run things, things are bad. But no one comes and says, okay, let's. These are the things we have to do. The Republicans have control of Congress right now. What the hell are they doing to improve the education of black kids, poor black kids across America? Nothing. When the Democrats are there, they just pour money. Why do they pour money? Because more money is into the teacher unions and the teachers, then that becomes a way to launder money for political campaigns to the Democrat Party, because the government gives money to the unions. The unions then give donations to Democrats. It's a way to launder money. So the Democrats take money from the government and they fund it through the teacher unions and all these unions. And they convince all these teachers to vote Democrat as well. So it's they do it just for the money. They couldn't care less about the kids. They don't care that how many Democrats are are saddened by this. Their solution, let's pour more money into this. The federal government's not giving us enough money. No, it's not that. It's that we have to destroy the teacher unions. We have to put the kids above the unions. And where is anyone saying anything about this? We should restructure the whole education system, the public school system. We should create accountability at all levels. Teachers, there should be no unions at the government level. And I think we've briefly mentioned this before. This goes along with the third pillar that we mentioned before, where we cannot use government for personal benefit. That's one of the five pillars of government. There are 10 pillars, five that define authority or government, and the other five define the five human rights. And one of the pillars was you cannot use authority for vain and personal purposes to benefit yourself personally. So teacher unions should never exist at the government level, because if you're in public service, that's what you're there for. If you want to make money, go work in the private sector. But if you want to serve, then you're there. The unions are impossible to have in the government system, because there is, see, when there's a union in the private sector, they are fight or in arguments or conflict or whatever with the employer, who has a vested interest in not paying too much money to the employees, because it's his money. It's like he only has so much money, so he has to make sure not to overpay the employees for natural reasons. No business can function if employees are overpaid, because the company is going to collapse. It's just not workable. But he has a vested interest. It's his money. When the unions negotiate, that's the word I was looking for, negotiate with the government, their employer is the government. But the government, who are the government? The politicians. So the politicians, and what money are they playing with? It's not their own money. It's not the money of the Congress people or the president or whatever the hell, it may be. It is the money of the people. So in the government, at the government level, that negotiation thing breaks down, because in negotiations you have to have two people who have who are fighting with competing interests. Like they're gonna, one is going to take away something from the other, and the other is going to take something from the first one. There's this tug of war. But at the public level, there's no tug of war, because the union is fighting to get more money, and the government, are the politicians. They're not trying to save the money, the country from paying too much, because it's not their money. So they just give it away, because the more they give away, they get more for themselves in that laundering scheme that Democrats have. You see what I'm saying? So that there's no negotiation going on, because both sides benefit from the government spending more money, because the politicians just, they keep raising the debt limit, debt ceiling. They don't care. And the more money goes into the teacher unions, the more money they will get for their campaigns. And so they're not negotiating with their money. They're negotiating with someone else's money. You see what I'm saying? That's why unions don't work at the government level. They should be banned. So that should be destroyed. And we should have a system where kids, black kids, should be taught very, very, instead of being taught all this nonsense, critical race and all this rubbish and gender transition, just real stuff, mathematics and English. And they should be imparted this concept that should be going to the black culture, and politicians should be speaking about it to tell black people, your way out is not by criticizing whitey, it's not by electing Democrats, it's by you getting a good education. That's the key for you to rise economically. And so during this impartation, the kids will be developing this idea, I have to study to move forward, and I will have a future in this country. And also, there should be a lot of things in the curriculum that focus on business. And I think that's a very missing part of our system, that kids should be taught how to start a business, how to do accounting, basic accounting. They should know. You should come out of high school knowing, if I want to start a business, I have to do this, 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 and this. These are the procedures. If I want to start a business, this is what I have to do to get going. And like practical things like that, so that Black people come out of the public school system and say, hey, if I have a great idea, I can start a business doing this, that, the other. Have that entrepreneur attitude about them. And that should be indoctrinated. And these are the things, the real things that politicians, especially the Republicans, should be doing instead of just criticizing. And yes, the charter school and voucher system, that's a good idea too. That's too long to explain right now. But that's just one part of a greater network. And we have to also clean out the public schools from violence and drugs. We have to provide Black kids a way to get out, have an exodus from that crime infested environment, to be in places where they can focus on studying, etc., etc., etc. Practical things, getting to the root of the problem, and inspiring Black people to learn, to grow, and to educate themselves. No one is saying any of these things. So we're just living in this exercise of futility, just putting more money and money and money into the problem, and then criticizing just in a futile way, just without really, really showing Black people we care. We want to see your kids rise and be great and do these great things, but you have to help us. We're going to do this, and then you have to do your part. No one is talking about it. So we're all just living in this thing where we pretend to care, and but no one really gives a damn, and we're not really dealing with the root issues. And the country is dying. And there are more things along these lines that we wanted to say, but time is gone. Has really run out, and we hopefully will continue saying the rest in the next audio clip. So this was about futility, people doing things, nipping at the edges and never getting to the core, and that's why the country will be dead in 7 months. Thank you very much for listening.